UNRWA Deputy Commissioner General Natalie Buckley, thank you so much for being with us today. Let me ask you first about how can you describe the situation in Gaza after your latest visit to the Strip?
Well, thank you very much, Khaled. So, look, that was my first visit to Gaza since the beginning of the war, and I have to say it was quite shocking to me. The population is literally besieged. People are on top of each other. There's now, you know, 1.7 million people displaced, 1.4 million perhaps in Rafah, if not more now. 1 million of these displaced people are in UNRWA shelters. These are schools or facilities turned into shelters. They were not meant to be shelters to start with. And so every shelter has, on average, 30,000 people. It's a situation of whether outside of the shelters or in the shelters, people being, as I said, on top of each other in tents or in shelters. And this creates, of course, a lot of issues with regards to sanitation. This is what shocked me the most, that in 2024, we have a situation where people are literally under siege, unable to access the most basic food or medicine, and at risk, you know, given the sanitary conditions, the health conditions. There's a smell in Gaza because it's open sewage. Everything goes to the sea. And of course, you know, there's communicable diseases, non-communicable diseases on the increase. And people are quite desperate. So it was quite a, the despair is palpable there. And at the same time, I was full of admiration for our staff, our colleagues. UNRWA has around 3,000 employees who still work day in and day out, providing services to the population, health services. We've got six health centers still operational, three in Rafah actually, and one even in the north, although we cannot check the condition of that one. And we've got mobile teams going to the shelters, on average, between the mobile teams and the health centers, it's 23,000 medical consultations that are given every day. I met some wonderful colleagues who, although being displaced themselves, living in tents and their houses destroyed and maybe no family members left, they still get up every day and go and deliver for the population.
Speaking of this situation, there are reports that more people are dying from consequences of that war, including a growing number of children dying from dehydration and starvation. What's your comment on this?
There will be a report issued very soon by the IPC, which will give us more information about the state of a looming famine or starvation in pockets of Gaza. But what I saw myself is that there's just simply not enough aid coming in. Before the war, there were on average 500 trucks coming into Gaza, a lot from the private or commercial sector. Today, what's coming in is a trickle, and it's not because the UN is not organized in terms of getting the aid in and then distributing it. The conditions and the circumstances are extremely challenging, from the checkpoints and the control of the aid that comes in, and then of course inside Gaza the security situation because of the war, but also because of the sheer despair of people, and now some looting and criminal gangs makes it very difficult for the aid to reach the population, especially in the north. More aid has to come in at scale, and with another humanitarian pause or ceasefire to deliver.
Women as well in Gaza continue to endure the consequences of this brutal war. What UNRWA provides to support women in Gaza?
Yes, so I, as a woman myself, I was very sensitive to this. When I went to health centers, first of all, there's no electricity in Gaza. So our health centers, there's no testing possible. There's very little equipment. Doctors are there with the stethoscope and perhaps a tongue depressor, but there's no electricity. So, and the dual use items list, you know, that there's a lot of items which are prohibited by Israel, including generators and solar power. So it makes it very difficult for health centers to operate machinery without these equipment. Why do I speak about the health centers? It's because mostly in these health centers you find women. The women are the ones caring for the families. Often they might be pregnant. There are 60,000 pregnant women in Gaza who deliver in absolutely, you know, horrendous circumstances at the moment. But they care for their children, they care for their elderly, for the parents. And so they are the ones who are visiting the doctors, trying, you know, either bringing family members or seeking advice. And their own situation is not is a very difficult one. We work to provide dignity kits, sanitary kits to women with, you know, of course, other partners as well, and assist also in the shelters. We've got our own team who ensure, to the extent possible, a protection for women, because the risks of a gender-based violence, of course, is when you live on top of each other like this and 30,000 people in one shelter is unavoidable. But we try and mitigate that.
So speaking of support challenges and the work that UNRWA does in Gaza, what is the impact so far of the fund freeze by some of the biggest donors to UNRWA?
So indeed, following the allegations, which I should say remain allegations at this stage, against 12 staff members of UNRWA with regards to their possible involvement in the 7th of October attack, 16 countries decided to pause or freeze or suspend, depending on the country, their contributions to UNRWA. What we see today is that some are coming back. And so we welcome that. And we welcome as well those who never left and who support UNRWA and who increased their contributions to UNRWA. Now, it has had an impact. It's, you know, altogether it was $500 million. It's, you know, that was suspended. And so we may, at the moment, we are able, and thanks to those who come back, in particular the EU, Canada and Sweden, who have come back, we're able to sustain our operations in all five fields. It's not only about Gaza. It's the funding freeze had an impact on all our five fields of operations. So for example, if, you know, if we don't get full contributions, we may not be able to get drugs for cancer patients in Lebanon. We may not be able to have children at school in Syria. You know, it has wide implications. But for now, because of the situation of those who came back, we'll be okay until the end of April. We hope then to see, to have better visibility for the months to come, as we work very, very hard with the donors to see how they can come back to the table and continue to support us, because all of them do say UNRWA has a critical and irreplaceable role during this humanitarian crisis.
Speaking of contributions, what's your take on the recent efforts to deliver humanitarian aid by sea and via airdropping?
Yes. Look, the needs are so immense that any method, any means of delivering aid is absolutely welcome. But we do insist that the safest and the cheapest way remains by land. And so we call on opening other land crossings, there's Kearney, or which is another crossing which could be opened by Israel, but also augment and increase the flow through Kerem Shalom crossing. For the airdrops, they're extremely costly, and of course we don't know who exactly receives the aid. These are the risks. And for the maritime, we will lend all efforts to ensure the successful delivery. It's ongoing now, but it's not without security or logistics risks as well.
UNRWA as well has launched its annual Ramadan campaign to provide much needed aid to Gaza through emergency food assistance. Can you tell us more about this?
Yeah, so this is a regular campaign that we have every year. And of course, it's sad that there was no ceasefire before Ramadan. And we know that there are still about 300,000 people in the north, and that I met families in the south who would have, you know, wished to be able to go and meet, see their families in the north and have and bring food, actually, and have Ramadan together. But for our campaign, yes, it's Zakat, and all of the contributions received through Zakat, the voluntary contributions, will go to the displaced people of Gaza.
So my last question, what's the message you like to send as the war in Gaza enters its 6 months?
It's immense suffering for the population of Gaza. It's, we know, 30,000 dead, and women and children bear the brunt of the conflict. a ceasefire is needed. We are hopeful that some negotiations will eventually reach that point, that outcome, and we continue to call on respect for international humanitarian law, international human rights law. Israel does have a responsibility as the occupying power in Gaza and as a member state of the UN to ensure compliance with international law.